on Pilot TV this week, we are turning into human vapor. But not because of the recent heat wave, but because we're reviewing Japanese supernatural series Human Vapor on Netflix. Plus, we head up to Scotland for some tartan crime antics in the dark on ITV and attempt to put our anti-animation bias to bed once and for all for season 2 of X-Men 97 on Disney Plus. Plus, Esther Smith is on the podcast this week to talk season 5 of Trying. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to Pilot TV, your essential guide to every show that matters. And we are all in the studio this week, even Steph, and I'm wearing my cowboy shirt, you will notice. This is my cowboy show, because we're recording our long-promised slash threatened Yellowstone special today. Although, if you are a Plus subscriber, you've already listened to it, just to complicate things a little bit, because of the way we do these things. And if you're not, then now, of course, is the perfect time to subscribe, because you get extra shows, spoiler specials, ad-free listening experience, the podcast, what is it, 17 hours early, or something mad like that? You know, it's a bargain, an absolute bargain to do that, and you also get to listen to the Yellowstone special as well. Oh, very, very exciting. Okay, right, fine, you're here. Boyd Hilton, Steph Seelan, how are you both?
We're good. I mean, James just told me off, I'm just going to say. He told me off for something. He accused me of making noises and doing emails, when in fact it was...
It was Boyd.
Boyd Hilton.
Yeah. It was Boyd all along. This is like Wackatha Christie, isn't it? Turns out it was Boyd.
But to put it in context, I have been waiting like hours while you two were at the beauty sale picking out like...
Yes, I know.
Toners and blushes.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I mean, that is fair point.
So I've been patiently waiting, then suddenly James decides, oh, let's start now. And I happen to be doing one email.
And we have been doing some admin.
Well, maybe we've got you some as well. There might be a nice bronzer that you've got your eye on that we could give you.
Don't take the piss.
No.
As a fellow bald man, I feel, you know, you making jokes about the beauty sale.
What?
I am so excited about the potential. Do you think, right, that we might get the cast of Off Campus for when they do season 2?
I'm fairly certain you will not be allowed within, like, 500 metres of the cast of Off Campus.
What?
I've seen some people obsessed with TV shows in my time, but I think this might be the most obsessed I've ever seen someone. Because, again, to put it in context, you spent the last hour in the office talking about it to anyone who will listen.
Yes, I did. But that's, as I said to them, okay... Belmont Camelli is redefining masculinity for a generation, okay? And it's really important that we
talk
about him.
It's a shame, isn't it? You have no real outlet to write a think piece about that, because it would probably be too detailed for he.
It doesn't match
Crime Monthly.
I know, he hasn't committed any crimes.
As far as we know.
Some kind of Pilot TV newsletter by Steph about Off Campus.
So you contribute to my newsletter, maybe.
Oh, I could.
Yeah, I mean, that's one
outlet. I'll do a little ditty for you,
The Boydie Bulletin, is that what it's called?
It's not called that. That would be good.
But why I'm talking about that is I was thinking, God, the hair ratio, if we get all of those boys in, right, guys in, can you imagine that picture? That would be great. We've definitely got to
What do you mean? You mean us two bald guys sandwiched between the lusciously haired heroes
I have
of
no
campus.
Wish to be photographed no. with those guys.
Oh, my God. What a contrast.
I'd be so excited. It would be amazing, though. It would be a great photo. We've got to get them in. We have got to.
I mean,
literally.
That's the dream. I think you would explode. Like in one of the TV shows you're reviewing today, I think you would explode.
99% of my time is spent thinking about Belmont at the moment.
This is a lot.
How does your husband think about this?
Oh, don't even get me started on him, right? I'm just going to digress into a little domestic story and then we will talk about it. But right, it's worth telling. Okay, so I had one of these conversations with my husband about the fact that he doesn't do anything to help me around the house, right? And I was like, listen, Liam, right, we've really got to talk about
that
this,
old chestnut.
Okay? Yeah, that old chestnut, washing, cleaning, ferrying our child, right? Like, come on, man. Like, it's really starting to, like, get me down. What can we do, right? Yesterday, right, so he says nothing. Yesterday, I opened the door. There's a delivery. It's a robot vacuum.
Brilliant.
No words, just a robot. And to him, that's it done.
Ticked off the list.
That's it done.
I mean, as an owner of a robot vacuum, I think he's right.
Of course you have a robot vacuum.
Well, I absolutely thought you two would never have this problem because you obviously have cleaners because you're so bougie.
No, I just have a robot vacuum.
Oh my God. So last night it was mapping the house.
Yeah.
I can't believe
what it's doing.
So it just goes rat. So basically I'm living in sci-fi.
It's a genius invention.
It's amazing. Mm. Anyway, I digress. Anyway, back to TV. Checks notes, as James would say. The podcast about TV.
Jesus Christ.
Wow. Yeah.
I don't even know where to begin with this. What have we been watching? I'm going to start with Boyd.
Okay. Did anyone see on last Friday on BBC One the Madonna and Graham interview?
No, I've seen clips though, because Kylie's the bartender and that excited me
Kylie,
a lot.
Kylie pops up in it as a surprise. And literally is a bartender, and she gives Madonna a drink and Madonna doesn't like it. She's like, no, take that away. Take that away. Bring me another drink. So then Graham gives her another, finds another drink for her. But it's one of the funniest moments in the whole thing, because you kind of, it's a little glimpse of the real Madonna.
Madonna, oh no, scared.
She said, oh no, that's disgusting. Take it away from me. Which I thought was really funny. But the extraordinary thing about this interview, right, or this program, was that it went on for, I think, 45 minutes, maybe even an hour. And it's one of the most boring interviews I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, my God, no. I mean, I haven't seen any lines about it, actually. It doesn't
there
seem
are
to...
no lines
okay, fine.
About it.
When that's we say lines, we mean haven't seen any headlines about it anywhere.
If your headline wants to be something like, why Madonna has made dance music for the last 30 years, why are you so into dance music? She kind of asks, because I like dancing so much.
Oh, no.
It's like that. It's more her fault than
his. That's what I was
going to
say. Is it her or is it Chris
Graham's
amazing?
Graham's trying his best, but he is nervous. I mean, you would be. He's interviewed before quite a few times.
Okay.
Right? Or a couple of times, I think, at least. But she is not one of nature's great conversationalists, is all I would say.
Oh, God.
She's kind of like, she's quite a one-word answer person for a lot of the time. So you will go, it must have been amazing when I was doing this. Like the other. Yeah, it was amazing. And you're like, just give him something.
This is like, it's like David Chase, isn't it? Like, this is
honestly,
extraordinary.
It is like, I could not believe how little of interest emerged from this whole thing. It's kind of makes a fascinating viewing in a way to show how you can have the most famous. It's a huge exclusive, by the way. I think this is her first interview, certainly first on camera interview for years and years and years. She never does interviews. And it's part, I was thinking, when people don't do interviews, you think, because they're so famous, they don't need to, you know, why should she maintain?
Yeah, why did she do this?
Maintains her mystique. I guess she thought, well, I'll do something to promote my album. Her album's out this week. But then you think, oh, that's really the real reason she doesn't do any interviews, because she's not that.
She's not one of nature's great conversations.
So, yeah, it was quite bizarre, the whole thing.
Because her video for that song that she released is amazing. With like
incredible
Benedict
people. Yeah, you know, and she kind of touches on that briefly, but even then it's like not that interesting an answer and stuff. So, yeah, no, she's got great people in that video. The video.
So she's a bit tired.
I don't know if she's tired.
As an artist, just generally just like feeling fatigued.
Knackered.
Yeah. Do you think she's just a bit like over it and a bit like, oh, God.
I don't know. I think maybe she's always been a bit like this, where she's hard. She's not an anecdotalist. That's another way of putting it. You know, the whole Graham Norton show, of course, this is, and by the way, this is nothing like they're not just sitting there having a chat. It's like it's got quite a contrived format whereby you see him on his way to meet her. They recorded at Coco in Camden near our old office. And there's a whole thing about the venue. There's a lot of mucking about. There's a lot of stuff happening before they actually get down to a chat, and even then when they get down to a chat they're standing there on stage chatting away, and it's all quite it's just a bit awkward all the way through. It's a bit awkward, and it, as I say, as in Graham Norton's show, if she'd appeared on that as a guest, which I think she has done before, then it'd probably be better, because everyone's, you know, the whole point of that show is you're all telling your best anecdotes. Right, that's literally how it works. That in the pre-interview chat with the researchers, they extract these anecdotes from the guests and he cues
them up.
That's what happened. In this, it's like there are no anecdotes.
Oh,
you
God.
Know, it's just like overall themes. Like,
but do you think it's because she's not met anyone more famous than her, and she kind of does. So it's just be like, do you know what I mean? It's like, if you're Madonna, who are you going to fangirl over? Like, who, no. I mean, if she met
Belmont,
she's
really nice with
different.
Kylie. The Kylie scene is the highlight, because she's lovely with her, and, you know, and apart from having
not liking her drink.
That's a nice moment. But even then, she said, that's weird as well, because she goes, Graham goes, does this mean, you know, you've recorded a song together for the album? She goes, I'm not telling you. Why do you keep asking me questions or something like that? And you're like, trying to be funny. But even then, this is a fucking interview.
I can't watch it. It sounds too cringy.
It is quite cringy.
Is it?
It really is quite cringy. Yeah. But anyway, I watched that, so you don't have to.
Okay, thanks. Appreciate it.
I can reveal exclusively that I finished Paradise.
Oh,
wow.
Well done.
Yeah, finally.
Yeah.
Okay, over to you for Widow's Bay.
Oh, do you know what? Exactly. I do need to get on the Widow's Tray wagon, not least of all because it is now, as we record, the 1st of July, which means we need to do our half-year review. So there are two approaches to this. Either we present four distinct and separate lists, or we try and have a combined pilot list. Or, and I've just had an idea.
Oh, God.
Right, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to have blind lists. This I've just decided. Just
off the,
we're going to have blind lists. You're going to do one. You're going to do one. Kay's going to do one. I'm going to do one. And none of you are going to know what the other people have voted for.
Except everyone's will say off campus.
And then I'm going to tally them together using just mathematics, and I'm going to create a master list. Yeah.
What would the other way of tallying them together be if you didn't use just mathematics?
Shut up, Steph. And no, it's going to be because you're not going to know. You're not going to know what it is ahead of time. Okay, yes, that's how we're going to do it.
This feels
there can
like
be no, there can be no conferring.
But you could fix this.
I could, but I won't because I'm pathologically honest. And you'll also know because I'll undoubtedly be furious about the list afterwards. But yeah, that's what we're going to do.
You, me and Kay will get together beforehand and just try and, you know,
okay, and there's going to be two rules.
Yeah.
One rule. No conferring.
Yeah.
Second rule, and this is the most important rule, and it applies primarily to you, no tactical voting, which means if you put something at number two, it has to be the one that you genuinely think will be at number two, not because you think, well, no one else will vote for it and I want it to be higher up the list. It can be no tactical voting. It has to represent, because you're going to have to...
I like the way he's implying that I usually...
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm implying. And we will go through this.
I think you tactically vote more than I do.
I will not be tactically voting. I will not be... I will put it down, call it as I see it.
I think we can tell you now that Silo's not going to be on it.
I think you'll find it might.
Okay. I actually really like Silo.
I like Silo as well.
There
okay.
we go. It might be on the list.
But Silo's not an issue. There are other issues.
No, there are other issues.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, let's see.
All right,
but
that's
exciting. I feel like before we do the list, I should watch at least a couple more Widow's Bays to
you
see
have to
if.
Get to... is it? You've watched the whole thing yet?
No, I've got one left because remember I went on to off-campus.
The former champion here.
I know,
who's to stop
I think the penultimate one, which is, I would call describe, without spoiling it, the Halloween-y type one, if you're talking about the different genres. Horror, it explores various horror genres. And there's one episode, I think it's the penultimate, which is Halloween-y one, is phenomenal. And I think if you watch that one, I watched that one and I thought, this is the one James has got to watch because it's so well done.
I think even by the second episode where the clown thing, this is not too much of a spoiler, with the when he's in the crawl space, I think from that point, you're like, oh, God, this is horror. And it's done. Do you know what I mean?
True, yeah.
Or if I do that.
I haven't finished what I'm watching yet.
No, keep going, though.
Thanks, man. So Paradise.
So we can do
a spoiler special Paradise at some point. We've got so many spoiler specials to do now. It's ridiculous, but because Widow's Bay.
We're doing Widow's Bay.
But I have issues with it as well, so we may need to discuss it.
Ooh, okay.
There's a lot to discuss with that show. Okay.
You know what you haven't finished watching?
No.
The Pit.
Yeah,
the Pit, which has finished as this podcast goes out.
I've had an HBO Max disaster.
Yeah,
now
what's
I've got
happening
a.
With
I feel like
HBO
this
Max?
Is a relatively easy thing to fix.
I don't think it is because he would have fixed it.
I couldn't fix it, and then now the thing's gone by where I get my. And I'm just going to have to pay for it now. It's fine. I will pay for it. I don't care. It's fine.
Okay.
The statute of limitations, if you like, of when you can sign on for free with HBO Max has gone.
Oh, with the crossover with the Sky thing.
Hang on. I left it too late.
Hang on. No. Like, it's part of the Sky package. So you can definitely get it.
No, it's not.
Oh no,
that
of course,
simple.
Yeah, but no, but I can, but to get the premium version. You need to pay
for it.
Are you telling me you don't watch the 4K?
So just
version?
To be clear, your issue is not that you can't get HBO Max; it's that you cannot get it in 4K.
No. I could have got it in four. I could have got it. The premium version of HBO Max was offered to me kindly
for
by
6
HBO
months,
Max.
Yes,
and that has and I tried to do it and I couldn't get it to work. And now it's just gone.
Right.
Now I have to pay for it. And of course I'm not going to pay for the version where you don't get 4K. No,
but that's free. Like you have that by default because you have Sky.
I know that, but what I'm saying is, I have to pay for the 4K version, obviously.
Yes.
Like you would, obviously.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, if you needed to watch the finale of The Pit, you could just watch it in 1080p and it wouldn't kill you.
Okay.
I'm going to break this up.
This is boring.
No, it's not. It's that, you know what?
Your entitlement, I think, is a fundamentally good talking point.
Castle Boy. If you listen to Pilot Plus, you'll know that James has recently been to a party in a castle.
We're going to get onto that because it's relevant to the listener question.
Anyway, I'm with you, Boyd. So what else? Is that all you've been watching? My love.
No, I'm finished.
No, keep going.
Slow Horses.
Okay.
Has any of us, those of us have got it? How many of you watched?
Yeah, this is the thing that obviously listeners hate, but we
some
kind of have to.
Some of them don't mind it.
No, that's true. Some of them don't mind it. That is true. It seems to split the
audience. I think more of them don't mind it than do mind it.
Yeah, well, we got a very exciting email last week from Apple basically saying that all 6 episodes of the new series of Slow Horses has dropped on the screening site.
I haven't got it.
For people
well,
who aren't Steph.
You're my PA.
And...
Yeah, I'm just going to remind everyone, I'm with you guys because I don't have it because these two, you know, hoity-toity pair, have got it. I haven't got it.
We're special. Yeah. But yes, I did watch them all on the weekend and it was glorious.
I knew you were going to watch them all. I've limited, I watched the first one. I haven't watched the rest
how
yet.
Did you even do
because
that?
Because there's World Cup games every day.
Yeah, you're a dreamboat, that's why.
Thanks. It was a truly magnificent 6 hours that was a delight.
Now I'm going to have to... Yeah, anyway, all right. It's a play, but I'm going to mention it. I went to see a play last night. Russell T. Davis.
Getting your Russells mixed up.
Getting your Russells mixed up. Okay. Because apparently I always say Russell T. Davis, according
to... That was also on Plus.
Well, this is Russell T. Ovi.
This is Russell T. Ovi, exactly. Mm. He is in a one-man show at the Donmar Warehouse.
Wow.
Called The Guilty, which was also a 2021 film starring Jake Gyllenhaal. Do you remember this? The whole thing is him on, he's a policeman on dealing with emergencies. Yeah.
In a call centre. Do you love a call centre?
I love a call centre. You know I love a call centre. And this is set, whole play is set in a call centre where Russell Tovey is dealing with a horrendous call, which seems to me like a case of domestic abuse, etc.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And he's fantastic. I think it's possibly the greatest thing he's ever done. Obviously,
really?
I am very friendly with him and everything. But I'm not friendly with him at all,
and I still think he's fantastic.
It was so brilliant. So that, I would strongly recommend The Guilty at the Donmar. And finally, let me ask you this question.
Oh, is it going to be when you do Who Wants a Millionaire question? Because I love it when you do that.
No, it's not really, but it's more of a, what happened, what show arrived 25 years ago this Thursday?
25 years ago. So that would be what, 2001?
Yeah, Thursday the 9th of July, 2001.
2001.
Give us a genre.
It's comedy. Too early.
Comedy.
Oh, a comedy?
25 years ago.
Was it The Office?
It's The Office.
It's The Office. I was about The Office. Friends is much older than that. How old is Friends?
That's 90s.
Yeah. 25 years ago. So... I ritually, knowing this, and there's a Mackenzie Crook and Martin Freeman. Yeah. Morgan Freeman's a very good
Morgan
different.
Freeman in
I'd love to see him talk about The Office. Yeah. The two of them have come together for a special show on BBC Two on the Wednesday, the 8th of July this week, talking about their time. And it's the first time they've seen each other for years.
What?
They've just not... Yeah, they've just
busy
had separate, you know, paths, I guess. So they just have not chatted or spoken, or not for any, you know, reason of enmity or anything.
Yeah.
So it's quite incredible. So those two come together for this special on Wednesday on BBC Two, and then I'm just going to watch the first episode.
Treat yourself.
Treat myself. And it's just fucking incredibly good. It's so good. It's unreal. But yeah, so I think we should all watch the whole of maybe at least of the first
series of
The Office.
Do you like The American Office?
I do like The American Office.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah.
I find that very comforting, The American Office.
Yeah.
Because it's less cringy in an American voice.
It is, yeah.
Oh.
I know.
I'm not used to you agreeing with
me. No, I'm familiar with it. And it's totally different. And also it evolves, doesn't it? When it kind of moves beyond the shackles of replicating the UK story, it becomes its own thing.
Oh, it's fantastic, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And lots of people do use it as a comfort show. I have... 25 years on, still never watched The Office. So.
What?
Wow.
I have seen several episodes because we did a comparison on this podcast. We did the first episode of the US and the UK and talked about the distinctions between them. But as you know, I can't deal with the comedy.
You have to watch The Office. You absolutely have to do it. That is absolutely
incredible.
I mean, you've never watched The Office.
No, I think I've seen maybe 3 episodes of the UK Office and probably about the same of the US Office. And that's it.
It's astonishing.
Yeah.
I don't have any words for that.
No, there are no words.
No, okay. Let's just
so
move
anyway,
on.
that is what I've been watching.
Okay, wow.
Steph.
Okay. Sorry, I was just retaking it.
I know, these are the shocks you have to do. Every now and then the show comes up that he just has not watched.
It's just... it's so much worse than Broadchurch. It really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. Right, so I have to admit that... I thought we were doing a show that we're going to be doing next week. Can I say which the show is? I'll say what the show is. Okay. The Little House on the Prairie. I thought we were doing that, right? So I spent a lot of my time...
Even though I made it clear that it was embargoed.
Okay, right. And as I said, the word embargo gets bandied around all the time, and I never really quite sure.
Earlier on in this show, you had to go at me for not reading up in the WhatsApp group messages.
Yes.
This is a classic case of you not reading up in the WhatsApp message. I'm asked very early, by the way, in the week to tell you what is and isn't embargoed, and then you just ignore it when I actually find out. It's quite... Anyway.
Anyway, so I've watched every single episode of Little House on the Prairie.
Wow.
Shocker.
I mean, I've watched the first episode, but...
Or watched every single episode of that. So that was...
Is that out of duty or desire that you needed to watch all of them?
I can't, because we're going to do it next week, and I feel like I can't reveal any of that.
That's
but
true. Don't spoil it.
You know what happens when I've watched all episodes or something. But the other thing that I've watched, which I'm so excited about, which you two will absolutely not care about at all, is the third season of America's Sweethearts, Dallas Cowboy Cheerleaders. Right? Yeah. Now, I know what you say. No. It's
the
not.
The raised eyebrow James.
Because these women are athletes, and it's so amazing. And what's brilliant about this show, okay, is from season one, season two, season three, you're seeing the evolution of these female athletes, and they're taking back power. In last season...
This is a documentary series.
It's a documentary series, and they have just become this absolute global sensation. So much so that when this season opens, they've now got a stage show, and these women are becoming, you know, massive influencers in their own right, and not in like a tacky shit way, like in a, you know, they're doing good. Last season was all about them fighting for a pay rise, and they get like a 400% pay rise. It's just a great story. It's not a kind of run of the mill reality documentary. These women are athletes. They're incredible dancers. It's just in terms of looking at the Dallas Cowboys as a business model and how they make their money. It's fascinating. And obviously the girls are adorable.
You had me at business model.
It's really good. It's really enjoyable. And it's kind of the Dallas Cowboy Shooters are run by these two amazing women who were themselves Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders. And it isn't, I know reality is not your bag, but it's definitely worth a watch. It is, if you like, just for the fact that these women are just, they're so inspiring. They all have like, they're lawyers. They've all got proper jobs as well as being these Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders. This is not a reality show per se. So I've been watching that, and it's brilliant. I'm very happy it's back. Very happy. And Little House on the Prairie.
Little House on the Prairie, all episodes.
Yes. Yeah. James.
You'll be shocked to hear I've not been watching that.
I am shocked.
You are shocked. What have I been watching? I mean, mainly Slow Horses, if I'm honest with you, which I can't really talk about. Obviously, the Bear finale, though. Did we talk about that last week? I don't think we did, but we did on Pilot Plus do an entire spoiler deep dive into the final season of The Bear and the Bear finale. So that's what we reviewed on Pilot Plus last week. Yeah. So yes, that was something that I watched, and I very much enjoyed it. I thought it was great. The other thing, I've been pressing on with Spider-Noir. I got to the Nightmare on a Gurney episode, and it is a good episode.
Okay.
I think I've got 1.5 episodes left to watch of Spider-Noir.
I've given up on Spider-Noir.
I'm still not feeling Alex's 5-star show there.
No.
It's good, but also...
That's Alex Godfrey from Empire.
Yeah, he's great.
It's possible I'll never think about the show again once I finish watching it.
I like things to have a bit of a lasting effect, and I want this to be good. I wanted this to be better than it was.
It's fine.
It's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. And the other thing I'm doing, I have been immersing myself in the world of The Witcher.
Of course you have.
Wow.
But crucially, not a rewatch of The Witcher. Instead, I have been replaying the game The Witcher 3 on my PlayStation, which is set after the story of the books and, in fact, the TV series have finished.
What are PlayStations up to now?
I mean, largely letting me play The Witcher 3. But
are they, what are they, like PlayStation 4, 5? What
5.
Is it? Is
oh,
it 5?
I see. Yes, it's 5. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Not in general. What are PlayStation doing in their spare time?
What they've been doing? Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, hanging out, playing games, largely. I mean,
So on your PS5,
I've been playing The Witcher 3. Yes.
Okay. Is that a tappy tappy game? Is it a joystick game?
Is it a tappy tappy game?
You know the ones where you.
It's not some kind of dance simulator, no. Although, frankly, if they haven't made one of those yet, I strongly recommend a Witcher dance game.
You know what I mean? Or is it like? Is it one of those ones?
Yeah. I'm sorry. Please.
What are they called?
You're gesticulating in a strange way.
You know the game?
A controller.
Controller.
Right.
It's a controller game.
You do need to control the character, yes.
Okay, fine.
Telepathy not yet been invented.
What do you... Well, you don't know. what do you do in this game?
It is a sprawling open world fantasy RPG.
That sounds nice.
No, it is. Yeah, okay. It is.
Yeah. Headset?
No headset. Okay. There's no one to talk to. It's single player.
Oh, I'd love to see you on a headset. Yeah.
No, I don't have a headset.
Oh, you definitely have a headset.
No, I don't.
I do not believe
No, I genuinely don't. I don't, you know I don't like to speak to other people.
That's
if
true,
I can avoid
don't.
It.
What
so
am I saying?
I definitely don't want to hear when I'm playing online games that most of the people I'm playing games with are like
12.
Children. Yes. I don't want to know that. I like to assume that they are all my age and that's it. So,
okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. But yeah, I've been playing The Witcher 3, which I have obviously played before since it's like an 11-year-old game.
Okay.
But
when you sit down to start to play on your games console,
yes.
How long do you go
with
for?
My clicky tappy tappy thing?
Yeah. With your tappy tappy. How long do you go for?
That would very much depend. I ploughed a good number of hours into it over the weekend, I will say that.
In one sitting?
There was definitely at least one six-hour sitting, yes.
6 hours?
Oh yeah, yeah.
You could have watched Widow's Bay.
I could have done. And the thing was, I didn't even intend to do it. I just booted it up for whatever reason and then got sucked back into the world of the continent.
Okay, you need to make sure that you are using eye drops because that is a lot of screen time.
Yeah, it was quite a lot.
Continuous for 6 hours. Do you have any breaks?
I mean, I blinked a few times. Does that count?
I mean, okay.
Yeah.
All right, well, I'm glad you're happy.
Well, thank you.
So that makes
thank
me
you.
Happy.
I enjoyed it. So, yeah, that's what I've been watching/playing this week.
Nice.
Should we have a listener question?
Let's do it.
Okay. This week's listener question comes from Mark. And Mark,
hi, Mark.
Says, greetings, pilot people. As I wait excitedly to board a plane from here in San Jose, California to Utah, a mere 2.5 hours away, to live all things Yellowstone in the park and on a ranch, I wondered, what location would you like to visit to indulge in that show's oeuvre?
I mean, this is you two question because
okay.
I mean, both of us would like to go to Wyoming, wouldn't we?
Oh, God, yeah. I would absolutely love to do that. Mm. Yeah. Oh, God, wouldn't that be amazing? People keep sending me things of like how we can get to
Dutton Ranch.
Yeah,
we get like a pilot holiday on the Dutton Ranch.
Somebody sent me something the other day, which is how you can have a Yellowstone holiday in the UK.
Yes, someone sent me that
Did they
as well.
Send you that as well? Yeah, that was good.
I was tempted by that.
Yeah, it looks really good, doesn't it? God, this connection we've got over it.
Is the actual Yellowstone National Park where Yellowstone is set? Because there is a Yellowstone. No,
there's a part of it. So if you watch Yellowstone, there's a part that's designated to the park, isn't there? In the show.
Because I've been to the park. I've been to Yellowstone.
Oh, have you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well then why aren't you watching the show with us?
Yeah, Boyd.
Yeah.
It's too late. I just left it too late.
You left it too
really?
Late.
Yeah. Yeah. That's because the frontier's now largely gone.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
I think I'm banned from saying this, but I'm going to say it anyway. Cabot Cove, Maine is where I'd go as well. Murder, She Wrote.
Of course.
Yeah, of course. Boyd's looking at me like,
I mean,
what's a Cabot Cove? Yeah. Where is it? Is it in Maine?
Cabot Cove. I think the real one is not in there. I'm going to have to number crunch this.
It's going to be like in Halifax or something, isn't it?
No. Cabot Cove, real. I'm sure Cabot Cove, real, is... Mendocino. I hope I'm saying that right. Does that sound right? Mendocino in California.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'd go there.
California being routinely mistaken for Maine.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's where I'd go. Oh, hang on. What's it called? Oh, Perkins Cove. Yeah, I'd go there. That'd
just
be
a cove.
Delightful.
Just any cove.
Any kind of cove, and I'm there.
Any cove you like.
Isn't this just about Yellowstone locations, though?
I don't think so. No, he's saying like, where would you go?
Where would you go?
A place? So, for example, were I to want to lord over people in a kind of upstairs downstairs situation, I would go to Hampshire and hang out in Highclere Castle because obviously that is Downton Abbey.
Oh, I see.
Yeah,
yes.
Which is somewhere I have always wanted to visit and have yet to do so. So,
haven't you?
No, I do need to go to Highclere Castle.
Hampshire is like
I
not
have,
that
I
far.
Have visited Highclere Castle.
Of course,
well.
You have.
I did. I think it might have been the maybe second or third season of Downton Abbey. I used to do the Richard Bacon show every week on Five Live, and I was the TV reviewer for like 6-7 years. And one week we did the whole show live from Highclere Castle as they were filming Downton, and it was absolutely brilliant, I have to say. Because so you wandered in, we recorded half of it inside the massive room of the castle, and then we'd retreat to a kind of the general, you know, hanging out area, if you like, and then Hugh Bonneville would come over and have a chat, and then, you know, it was fantastic. It was a brilliant, brilliant day at Highclere Castle.
What went wrong that you're slumming it now with us?
Well, Richard Baker replaced me with someone else, Scotty Ryan,
Richard.
It's fine. I'm not resentful at all.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, no, it was really exciting.
Okay, so but would that be your where would be your location to actually visit if you could from any TV show?
I kind of haven't really thought through about it because I thought this was legitimate.
So you just ignored it.
To do Yellowstone.
Skimmed the question, misunderstood it, and moved on.
But you must have more. You must have a whole list of them, surely.
Well, I mean, obviously, I spent the weekend reliving my Wolf Hall fantasies because, yes, I stayed at Hever Castle on the weekend, which is where they shot Wolf Hall. Yes, which is former home of Anne Boleyn and you know, Henry VIII.
In your bougie, your friend's bougie birthday.
My friend had a bougie birthday there and had hired out Hever Castle, so I got to hang out there after hours. Mm. We got a private tour. It was great.
Did you? Yeah. Did you have an audio tour, which is my favourite type of tour?
No, we had a guide.
Oh my God, you're so bougie.
Yeah, because it was like a private tour. It'd be a bit of shit private tour if they just packed us off with like a Walkman.
Oh,
so
no,
there you
I'd
go.
Be happy
listen
with
to
that,
this.
Just so I could do it on my own and just, you know. Yeah. Boyd.
I've thought of an answer. It's good. I would go to the Hamptons.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, let me just tell you, right?
Mm.
Why would you go to the Hamptons for what show?
Well, I'm half. There's, first of all, I need to cheat because I'm not supposed to mention Seinfeld, but there's a hilarious episode of Seinfeld where they go to the Hamptons and George and his ex partner who dies, right? Her parents, who are furious with him and blame him for her death, insist on taking him to. He lies to them saying he's got a place in the Hamptons and he hasn't got a place in the Hamptons at all. And they go on this journey to this place that he hasn't got. And it's like, how far will he go in lying to them? And they're like, okay, George, and they know he's lying. It's just hilarious. It's such a brit. But it is all about him having a fake place, not having a place in the Hamptons at all.
Okay.
But there are loads of those.
I can't believe you haven't been to the Hamptons.
Yeah, I can't believe it either. I've been to kind of similar places. I've been to Nantucket, and in fact, we'll be covering Nantucket. There's a show called The Five Star Weekend coming up with Jennifer Garner
that's
set in Nantucket. Do you remember The Perfect Wife, was it called? With Nicole Kidman?
Perfect Couple.
That was from the same author, and that was also set in Nantucket in a very similar kind of huge big house. So Nantucket is another one, but I have been there.
Okay.
So I didn't include that. But there must be loads of those shows.
One of my best trips ever. So my best friend lives in America, Nicole. She and I went to Montauk where the affair was filmed, and we went to the restaurant and it was incredible. And we had like the crayfish. Oh my God, it was just, and they were filming the affair whilst we were there. And it so exciting because I love, love, love that show. Did you like The Affair?
I don't believe I've seen The Affair. I think I might have watched the first one, but I don't think I've seen it. No.
So they're just showing it now, aren't they, on ITVX? It was an incredible show.
James, can you please watch The Affair?
I have not.
Dominic West is fine. Yeah. It's amazing. It's absolutely fabulous. Do you think he'd like it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
You should watch that.
It's on the sofa list, if that's helpful at all. Yeah.
Okay, can you please do that, please? Yeah, so Montauk is amazing.
That's brilliant. Yeah, the one with The Affair. Also, that show Revenge was set in the Hamptons.
Oh, Revenge.
Oh, my
that's a
God.
Great
with
show.
Emily Van Camp.
Yes.
That show is... I see that one I've seen.
Yeah, that show
is
demented.
Deranged.
Yes.
Yeah.
In
exactly.
the best way, though.
I mean, it's not good, but it's weird. It's strangely compelling.
It's totally good.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is it, though?
Yeah. Oh, you and I are not vibing today. We've really got to get it back together. For our Dutton Ranch episode.
And there was that show Sirens on Netflix that was in the Hamptons as well. Because a lot of these kind of, because there's the whole genre, I mean, we'll hopefully review the Five Star Weekend coming up. But that is the latest in this whole genre of rich, privileged women gathering in huge, big, lush property porn type places like this.
Let me tell you, I went to Sag Harbor, which is in the Hamptons, and in my, like, you could smell the wealth. Like,
oh, really?
I've never, everybody had, like, their yachts. It was like being on a film set where everyone was massively rich, but it was actually these people's lives.
Yeah.
And I just...
And there was a reality show, wasn't there, about property in the Hamptons,
and
how difficult it is to buy anywhere for any reason.
Well, you can't insure it because you can't get insurance, so you have to be that rich that you don't mind
if your house is
destroyed. Because it's very flat.
You can't get insurance.
You can't get house insurance on property in the Hamptons because it's so close to seawater, right, and it's very flat there, so any damage that happens to it, no, you won't get insurance. You just can't get insurance. You have to be rich enough to be able to write
it's on a
house.
Floodplain, is what you're saying.
You just can't You can't do it.
So you can get content insurance, but not building insurance.
It's like you're asking me like you're thinking about buying a house in the Hamptons. Let's be honest, honey. Yeah.
I'm not really upset. The sale's almost gone through. Yeah. I don't know what to do. Like you're saying, I can't get insurance. Oh my God. No, I'm not buying a house in the Hamptons.
No. So, you can't. And you can't get insurance. So there you go.
We could. Yeah. Okay. He could if he had the money. But yeah.
He doesn't have the money.
I think that's fair. Boydie could buy me one. I think that's, accurate.
No one here is on Hamptons money, okay? Yeah. No one.
Oh, God. How did we even get onto this?
Oh, because we're locations.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Locations. This is the question.
Right, yeah. So you've got the Hamptons. Yeah. I've got Cabot Cove.
Yes.
You've
I can't even remember. I was at Highclere Castle. But then, like Northern Ireland has all the Game of Thrones locations. Yeah, well, not all of them.
You must
it has
have
a bunch
been
of them.
To some of those, surely.
No. I was invited on set of Game of Thrones, but it was when they weren't shooting. So it was like you basically
you
come on. No, so basically come and do a set visit, but we're not shooting at the moment. So it's like
come on and see nothing.
So I was like, but apparently it was like to basically tour the sets and things like that. And so I probably should have gone because in reality I would have got to sit on the Iron Throne. That would have been fun, but I didn't. I didn't actually do it because I felt that would make for a challenging feature. Here we are on the set. There's no one about.
You could have the local shopkeeper. You know, it could have been anything.
Yeah, it would have been a very, very weird set visit. That I'm wandering around on my Todd. No one to talk to.
It's so funny. When I was at Highclere Castle, here's the thing: we had a tour from the owner. A private tour from the owner,
Lord Grantham,
of the actual real life owner.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
The actual real life owner, and he said, in all seriousness, it's so massive. He's talking about there's literally hundreds of rooms in it. And he pointed to the top of it and there's like loads and loads of
ghost
floors, et cetera. He pointed up and he said, see that room there? And we were like, in between, blah, blah, blah. And we go, yes. He said, I've never been in that room. He's like, I've owned this place for, however long, dozens and dozens of years. It's been in the family for hundreds of years. And I've just never been in there. And we were like, why haven't you ever been? He said, it's just one of these things where it just haven't made it there yet.
Oh, I thought he was going to go until now.
So is that the only room he's not been in?
Yeah.
So he must now deliberately avoid that room.
Kind of, yeah.
So that he can say that.
Yeah, basically.
Right.
Seemed to be the case, yeah. I was
can
like, that's a great fact.
Having a house that big that you've not been in some of the rooms?
Exactly,
That's wild.
None of you have mentioned the White Lotus, although, of course, I have stayed at the White Lotus. So,
of course you have. Yeah.
The Thai one.
The Thai, that's what I was about to say. Well, I've been to Thailand.
You've also stayed at that hotel, haven't you?
No, I haven't. Which one is it?
I think you have. You have
is
stayed
it
at the
Tara one.
Yeah, but it's the one. So they shoot across two. They're shooting the Koh Samui one, and there's also the Phuket one.
Okay,
so
you've stayed at both of those.
So, yeah. Well, exactly. So you stayed at both of the. Okay.
I haven't watched White Lotus. Remember.
Yeah, well, you. So you
I'm being a James.
That's worse than him in the
that
office.
That is not worse
it's
than
up,
the
I
office.
Think, I think there. It's worse. It's
you think me having not watched a recent show is worse than him not having watched an absolute comedy classic?
I think it's up there. I think it's on a par. Yeah, I do.
We're breaking up friends, you and I.
Wow. Next you'll be saying you haven't watched Succession. Where does this end? God.
or the West Wing.
Fucking
hell. Oh my God.
Jesus Christ.
That's a whole thing. We need to move on from this. I'm going to, honourable mentions, I'm going to say the Y Valley in Wales for sex education, because like Otis lives in Simmons Yat, which is a place. And also, while we're talking Valley, Happy Valley. Have you ever been to Calder Valley West?
No, but I love Wales and I
Hebden
love all
Bridge,
the Welsh people.
Halifax?
Yeah, no.
God, we need to get out more.
We need to venture up north, I think, slightly more. Yeah. All right, brilliant.
To Slough for the office.
That's true. I think you're about to say Slough House, which technically is by the Barbican, isn't it? So actually we probably have been there.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Okay, good. I'm glad we had this chat. That was the listener question. If you want your question answered on this podcast, then the email address is postbag@pilottvpod.com. Shall we have this week's guest?
Oh, please.
I think we should. Okay. It is, in fact, time for Apple's comedy gem trying to return for its fifth season this week. And to celebrate the fact, Esther Smith came on this very podcast to have a chat with Jordan King about the latest season and everything that it means for Nikki and Jason. So this is Esther Smith talking to Jordan.
So it is my absolute pleasure to welcome back to the Pilot TV podcast, star and executive producer of Apple TV's Trying, Esther Smith. How are you today?
I'm really good, thank you, Jordan. How are you?
I'm good. Congratulations on another just lovely warm hug of a season of this show. It is the go-to comfort watch in my household. How does it feel to be back now with a fifth season? It's almost unprecedented in the modern sort of TV landscape. A fifth season and back as an EP this time too.
Yeah, no, it's incredible really. And I'm I'm so chuffed that we get to keep telling the story. Initially, I kind of assumed that we would be here for like three seasons because that seems to be the like a trend. And then, yeah, to be gifted a fourth and a fifth is amazing. And I just think there's scope for more, just because, you know, it's just nice to look into this quite ordinary people in this family and seeing where they're at and where their lives are taking them, because they're just fun people to spend time with, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, this time around as well, you're coming back into this, you know, you're an executive producer now on the show, which is one major life event. You're also coming back to this show now as a mother yourself, which congratulations for that as well. But how do you feel like in any way, shape or form, trying has kind of being a part of a show like this with such a big heart, is did that help prepare you for what it would be like to be a mum, as much as anything can ever prepare you for that particular madness?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what it is. It is absolute madness. I don't think anything can prepare you. I think what has been nice is that I feel like I've been around that question of what it means to be a parent. And so I've had that luxury of playing a parent and then like dealing with certain subject matters that being a parent throws up. So in a way, Andy, who's the writer, has given me a bit of a blueprint from his scripts in a way. But yeah, I'm not sure anything truly prepares you for the tiredness and the sleep deprivation.
as a father of two daughters under five, I can heavily relate to that particular struggle.
Oh my gosh, so you know.
I know. But do you feel like the way that you look at Nikki's changed at all though now on the other side of all of this? Because obviously you were sort of, you know, as actors do, you were imagining something that you hadn't yet experienced for yourself. But now you're going on to set and you're bringing with you, almost necessarily, you're bringing a big part of your own life with you. Yeah. And your tiredness. Yeah. It's a very realistic depiction of being absolutely knackered. But yeah, do you feel like Nikki's changed a little bit now when we come back for season five?
Yeah, I do. I do. And I think it's more in that because she's the parent of essentially two teenagers now, I think there's, with the kind of the parent storyline aside, she's in a way being given the opportunity to reconnect with who she is and what she's about. So she starts this new job as a manager in this very, very trendy travel agency and is meeting people on the terms of not as a parent, as Nikki. So that's kind of a nice opportunity for her just to, yeah, be Nikki, not Mom Nikki. So I think that has changed. Yeah, she's changed in that essence. And also I just think we're constantly accruing information. Feels like daily, like being a parent. So inevitably you're kind of constantly evolving and growing. So I feel like she's in itself is her toolbox is a bit more packed now. It's definitely a very different Nikki to the maybe naive Nikki from series one.
Yeah, definitely.
Beautifully naive.
Beautifully naive. But it's really interesting that you mentioned that sort of reconnection element. I mean, I definitely feel that as a parent now, trying to sort of remember who am I amidst all of this craziness. But I think it is interesting too, because trying, like you say, it could have been a three seasons and done kind of thing, like they could adopt Princess and Tyler and that would be a lovely end to the story. I feel like every season ends in a way that would satisfyingly be an end if it was. But it is interesting that now that you've gone beyond that, all of the characters of the show have become these so rich and lived in people. I mean, I've just been rewatching the first series and Scott, when he's first introduced, is sort of the worst man in the world in many ways. And now I find myself in season five, literally crying at situations that he's in. But it is interesting, the sort of the maturation of the series. And I think it's a testament to Andy Walton's writing. He obviously does this all by himself, but also a testament to you guys as a cast. Something that I did think was really interesting, though, that I don't feel like I've seen very much of on screen, or at least I can't think of, is the approach that you guys take to blended families in season 5, and the idea of, you know, what is it like if you've built a family and then a biological parent comes back into the fray? And I just wondered, like, what kind of conversations were you guys having with Andy, with Charlotte Riley, who's brilliant as Kat, about how you were going to handle that kind of, you know, it's very sensitive subject matter, and I feel like you deal with it very sensitively.
Yeah, oh, thank you for saying that. Yeah, I think it's really important that it is a portrayal which is extremely looked after and thought about. And in truth, to be honest, it just all comes from Andy's writing and his brain and his words. I feel like also the, you know, having brilliant Charlotte Riley in it, kind of, and her sensitivity coming into this story, and the beautiful connection that she has, that Kat has with Princess. I think it's all from Andy, all of that work. And I think just a collective want to tell the story truthfully, with heart and with humour, and being aware of what this actually story might mean to certain people, and also showing people who it doesn't necessarily directly affect what that might look like. So I feel like there wasn't a lot of conversation around it. I feel like it was just all an organic thing that we came to collectively because of Andy's script.
Yeah. And I think I suppose as well that there's an element of everything in trying right from the very beginning. It all is, you can feel that it's all approached without judgment. And it's a show that's very much built with optimism baked into its DNA. It struck me just while I was in the waiting room for this, that this is sort of the original Apple TV therapeutic comedy. Like, you guys were here right at the start. You're 5 seasons in now, but there is no Shrinking and there is no Ted Lasso or any of those without what you guys sort of built the foundations for here. Do you think that's part of why we are still so invested in Nikki and Jason all these years later?
I wonder. And it's so easy. I'm glad you mentioned that, because it's so easy to forget that, actually, because that the platform has grown so much. And it's funny, because we were lucky enough to be invited to the big, what's it called?
Like big, the presentation day thing.
Yeah, in Palo Alto, where the actual playground, it's like a playground. with all these incredible stars, like hot, like the cream of the crop of Hollywood. And then me and Rex just like, walking around eating apple pie, because they served us these amazing apple, like, mince pie things. And yeah, it was very much in its infancy, and that felt really special. And I think because we had that, and because we were one of their first quite early on, I think just like within it, there's just like that special feeling of not taking it for granted, and also not taking the story for granted. It still means so much, even being 5 seasons on. Like, I personally never take for granted what this story means and what it means to people. And it always hits me, even talking about it in press. I find it quite emotional talking about it. And I think that is a gorgeous mixture of what the story is, the people collectively who are involved, the audience's response to it, the fandom that it's generated. Even if it's something that has been quietly there on the platform, it's kind of, yeah, it's amazing that it's just kind of quietly there and people are getting to it and coming to it and can now binge 5 seasons of it.
Yeah, it is. It's the heartbeat of the platform for me. It feels like it's set the standard for everything that's followed. Congratulations on a really lovely season 5. And here is hoping that season 6 will be on its way, because I would keep watching these for many, many years to come. But yeah, thank you so much for your time, Esther. It's lovely speaking to you.
You too. Bye.
That was Esther Smith. Let's talk news. What have we got, Steph?
Well, there's been a real reverse ferret of news.
Has there?
Yeah, because Tom Hardy
oh, yes.
is back.
He's back in Mobland.
I always thought this was
he's sorted out his differences with the producers. That's what it says.
Can we just say he's back in Mobland, a show that crucially has not been officially renewed?
the headline that I've got is Tom Hardy makes Mobland return after settling spat with producers. What do you know about this, Boyd? I feel like you know something.
Well, there was a lot of differing accounts of whether or not he was actually suspended from the show sacked from the show or not, neither of those things. And then there was this whole saga about, you know, is it something to do with Helen Mirren? And,
yeah, and it all got a bit political, didn't it? Yeah.
And then I think she completely denied that she had any problem with him at all.
Yeah, she put out an Instagram post, yeah, I think, saying that she loves him and she always has.
Exactly. So I never quite thought, oh, they've got rid of him. So, you know, I think it's good to confirm the fact that he's still in it, because he's obviously the best thing about it. But
it just says it appears to be resolved. I really want to know what it was. I would like to know.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll never know.
Maybe we'll never know.
Or maybe we'll know and we can never say. Who knows?
Perhaps.
Okay.
We've had lots of other things happening this week. It's been quite a busy one. It's been a good week for Reacher heads. Because not only do we have a Reacher date, the new season of Reacher is going to be landing on, this is season 4, on Wednesday, August the 12th on Prime, but we have a date, September the 16th, for Neegley, the spin-off series. And yes, I know they pronounce it Neely in the show, but that really annoys me because it has a G in it. The G is not silent, so I'm going to call it Neegley. But yes, that is the character of Neegley, and she's getting her own spin-off, and that lands in September. So when it's double Reacher year.
When you say the G is not silent,
yeah,
when they themselves actually have it as silent.
Yeah,
I
disagree.
Why do you disagree?
Because that's not how I read it, and it upsets me.
Okay.
Yeah. Neely, not Neely.
That tells you everything about James that you need to know.
It really does. It sums
him
up.
Say you're a James without saying you're a James.
I reject the silent G.
Okay.
Fine. I'm going to show you both a photograph of this person. I'm going to ask you if you know who it is.
Okay.
I'm loving this quiz element today.
Yes, that's Taylor Sheridan.
Taylor Sheridan. Oh, okay, yeah. Of course we know Taylor Sheridan.
Don't you think Taylor Sheridan looks exactly as you'd want Taylor Sheridan to look? He's got a kind of like, he's looking angry in this photo, which is basically him doing a podcast, by the way. And this is a story that has just emerged this morning from him doing this podcast interview.
Ooh.
And it's got a classic, you know, my classic variety headlines.
Yes, please
do. So he is the classic variety headline of the week.
Oh, amazing.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Okay, what's the headline?
Taylor Sheridan rips studio execs for knowing nothing and slams his TV critics, I do rage bait them, fuck them, honestly.
Is this about Sons of Anarchy?
This is about all of his shows.
Yeah.
No.
And basically he talks about how he did it all himself. He refuses to take notes from executives. He doesn't respect any of the executives who can finance his shows. He just ploughs his own furrow, does what the fuck he wants, and leave him alone, and he will provide you with, as he has done, clearly, dozens and dozens of mega TV hits, including the ones that you two are obsessed with, as we speak.
He is a genius. Let's use the word. He is. We're going to use that word.
Yeah.
He looks, he is, there is no better name for him than Taylor Sheridan, which sounds like a weird thing to say, but you're so right.
Sure. He looks like Taylor Sheridan. He's called Taylor Sheridan, and he makes shows the Taylor Sheridan you'd want him to make. He says, I knew when I started writing, I wanted to simply not do what everyone else was doing, he says.
Yeah.
Everyone else was making shortcuts, breaking all the basic rules of storytelling because they couldn't figure out their story. He knew what he was fucking doing is basically his response.
Yeah.
And it's a very entertaining piece, and I will be listening to that podcast because it sounds very funny.
Yeah, he's rather unfiltered. I think it's fair to say. Yeah. It's interesting.
He can afford to be. Yes. He literally afford to be.
When you run most of American television, as he does, his empire is now gigantic. Yeah. He can say what the fuck he wants.
Well, he bought the 460s ranch,
which was an
extraordinary amount of money.
The horses that they use, I mean, we'll get into this,
James,
but the horses they use on Yellowstone are his horses that he has trained and he lends them. He lends himself.
And that's a fact I didn't know.
Yeah.
But so interesting thing is, like, we talk about Taylor Sheridan, he
famously was Deputy Hale in Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah.
And he was saying when he did season two of Sons of Anarchy, he was like, I just wasn't earning enough money to live.
Mm.
And he was like, I couldn't do it. But then he goes on to say, I was earning $15,000 an episode. You're like, so you kind of were earning enough money to live, because that's actually, given that there's what, 8 episodes in a season, like, you've been doing all right, right? You're getting $15,000 an episode. You're not doing too badly.
I think he's got expensive tastes.
He's not on the breadline, is what I'm saying. But then horses, expensive pets.
They are expensive.
But he was saying that he went to the producer and said, I want more money. And he wanted, apparently he wanted 20,000 an episode. And they said no. They said 15 is what you're going to get. And so he basically jacked it in. He was like, right, I'm done. I mean, to be fair, I don't think he left in season two, but he then engineered his exit from the show. And he was just like, I'm done with acting, because he's like, I'm just not earning enough as an actor. He said, and all the power was with storytellers. So he said, fuck it, I will tell my own stories. And now he's just like dominating the globe. So it's worked out quite well.
That off.
Yeah.
You know what? Dutton Ranch, which has got season two, which we're very excited about. It's been renewed. But they, Chad Fian is the showrunner, and he's leaving. He's leaving. We're getting a new one. Do you know who we're getting?
Who are we getting?
Taylor Sheridan?
No, we're not. Oh, no, Taylor Sheridan's not involved.
He's not involved in Dutton Ranch.
No, he's not involved. Benjamin Cavill, and he has, his writing and producing credits include Justified, yes, please. Homeland, yes, please. Sneaky Pete, yes, please. And Godfather of Harlem. So this is going to be great.
This bodes well.
It does really bode well.
Mm. It's a good bode.
It's a good bode.
It's a good bode. So yes, more Dutton Ranch on the way. Very exciting. Do you see Department Q season 2 has begun production?
Yeah.
So it's still a ways off. We're not going to get to see
it. I thought that was surprising. I assumed it had started filming ages
ago. I thought
it
had been shot. I was waiting for it to arrive, but apparently they literally haven't made it.
Yeah. Yeah, I was surprised by that, I have to say. But fair enough, I guess if it takes a long time to write.
Shut up.
Okay.
They managed to put out like 18 episodes of Slow Horses every 5 minutes. You know what I mean?
It's like steady. Don't you have a go?
I mean, it's not 18; it's six,
once a year now.
But the whole they do that thing where they work on 3 seasons of Slow Horses at any given time. So they are either they'll be like editing one and then shooting one and then writing one, which is deranged.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
And presumably the reason why Will Smith is no longer the showrunner, because he, what is he going on holiday?
Yeah, Will Smith, the...
not that Will Smith.
Not the slapper.
Not the slapper.
Not the person who slapped Chris Rock, not that person.
This is a big political story, but I'm going to mention it anyway.
Oh, God.
He'll cut it out if he doesn't want it.
You won't have to cut it out, but the British government is apparently going to intervene in the Paramount proposed $110 billion takeover of Warner Brothers Discovery.
What's it got to do with the British government?
Why has it got to
because
do with
they
them?
Because they have outlets in British, you know.
But don't they have other stuff to do?
Government?
Yes.
Yeah, but you know, the Minister for the Arts, I believe it was Lisa Nandy.
Okay.
She is the Secretary of State for Culture, Media and Sport. She said in a written statement to Parliament on Thursday, following engagement with the parties and independent research from my department today, written to the current and proposed owners of Warner Brothers Discovery on my behalf to inform them I am minded to intervene.
I am minded.
Yes,
yeah,
she's minded.
I'm sure they're going to pay an awful lot of attention to that. So that's good. I'm sure Lisa Nandy's views will be absolutely taken on board.
We can't do this, guys. Lisa's been on the phone.
Lisa Nandy's just called. Yeah. I'm so sorry. It's not going ahead now.
Wow.
Yeah.
God. Poor Nandy, getting both barrels from you two. Yeah, she's trying her best to, you know. I think it's interesting because that deal is still yet to be finally, you know.
I don't think it's going to be crushed by Lee, though. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't.
You made that quite clear. Your analysis of this news story have made that quite apparent. Yeah. You may not be wrong. But I'm pleased. I'm encouraged that she's doing it because someone's got to fucking sort of intervene because it's an absolute nightmare.
Okay, I just don't get upset. She doesn't prevail. That's all I'm saying.
Look, I enjoy a David and Goliath story as much as the next person, but this is very much like the little chihuahua barking at the 747.
Yes, I agree.
Anything else?
No, I have nothing else.
No, we have nothing else. Boy, do you have anything else?
No.
Good, then we can move on from news this week, I think, and move on to this week's reviews. Now, I should probably caveat reviews by saying this is maybe not the creme de la creme of televisual entertainment this week. Offerings were slim pickings, I think it's fairly safe to say. You know, it's difficult. Combination of embargoes and the aforementioned World Cup has meant that we struggled a little bit this week to find some shows.
I had a great time. I watched Little House on the Prairie.
Which we can't talk about. So just with that caveat out there, bear with us. Okay, so first up, we have The Dark on ITV, which is an adaptation of the novel From the Shadows by G.R. Halliday, which is the first of his D.I. Monica Kennedy series. And this takes us up to Inverness for a ritualistic murder. Yeah. Mm. And who better to tell us about this than our own ritualistic murder expert, Steph?
Great. Well, I thought you two were going to be really upset about this because one of the opening scenes is the body in the open, and I know you don't like
well, yes,
bodies.
But actually, I was like, big thumbs up because it was a naked bloke.
Yes.
Yeah. And I thought, yeah, it's all about naked women.
Okay. I was like, oh, they'll be okay with this.
No, I'm absolutely fine with it because I get so bored of that trope of just like murdered women all the time. And it's just, actually, murdered men. Yeah. All right. Carry on.
Well, since you've mentioned it, I should just, because I've just been working on this, and in the press pack for the show, they interview the director, and she says, or the writer, sorry, and she says that was an absolute deliberate thing. She was sick and tired of having women, naked women, corpses in shows. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, they're very much specified. And that part of her being interested in it was the fact that it was men, male men, who are the victims in this show.
Male men. Okay. Okay, that's really interesting. Right, okay, so we open. This is set in Scotland. You know, my heart sort of belongs to Wales at the moment with regional crime dramas. But yeah, I'm really enjoying the rugged Scottish landscape of this. So we're introduced to the detective, and she is obviously brilliant. She's got a new partner who is an idiot. He's an idiot, and they are sent to see, she's got a young child. You immediately know there's a backstory there. There's a mystery. I'm not going to spoil this for anyone, but this all sort of happens in the first 5 minutes. She's in a cinema, a woman comes to talk to her. You're unsure. If you've read the books, you'll know. But she's unsure.
Have you read the books?
No, I haven't read the books, no. Okay. She's unsure who
you
the
people are. Well, if you've read the books, you'll know.
I did do it like that.
Yeah,
you
did.
Really
implied that you had read the books.
If you've read the books, you'll know. Have you read the books? Yeah, I've read the books. Of course I've read the books.
Just edit in that lie.
Of course I've read the books. I haven't read the books. But as you know, I told you this before, I don't really like crime fiction. I love crime fact. Yeah, I love true crime. Anyway, anyway, okay, so we're introduced to the detective. There's a sinister female figure who is something from her past. So all, great, great, great. And then with this new partner she gets, they've been investigating this body in the field, which is
they're not out for a hike.
They don't happen upon. That's absolutely not what happens. They do not go on a hike and happen upon a naked man. Do not listen to me. What am I talking about? Okay. And they need to find out why this man is, but obviously because the detective knows the area, she lives in the area, she quickly knows who it is. I don't want to give too much away because you're introduced to Helen Baxendale. She's in it, who I was very pleased
wielding
to see.
Wielding
what
a gun.
What a sight. But again,
it wasn't like that in Cold Feet, was it?
It wasn't like that in Cold Feet. Yeah. Do you know, she's great though. She is really good in this. And the absolute MVP of this whole thing is an amazing Irish wolfhound. Oh my God, the Irish wolf. And the dogs are a theme, in this. So I'm not just saying it just because I love dogs. You're also introduced to a young man who gets a mysterious phone and is getting messages potentially from his mum. Again, I don't want to spoil this. So just tell me if you think I'm going too far. Do you think I'm going too far, James?
No. I think you're okay.
It's fine. Yeah.
Right. What I would say about this, right, for me, for the first kind of 30 minutes, I thought, oh God, this is a bit clumsy and predictable. It feels a bit pedestrian. I'm not really into it. And then the last 10 minutes, something happens, which I'm not going to give away, that absolutely ramps this up to a really exciting drama and something completely different, but I can't give away what it is. The whole first episode, there's so many mysterious things going on. You kind of can't really tell. It's quite hard to figure, like, how does she know him and who's that and who's that other woman? There's a lot of plots set in motion in this first episode, which is quite hard to kind of get to grips with, I found anyway. But by the last 10 minutes, I was really hooked and I thought it was good. It's not absolutely amazing. You know, it's not Apple TV crime drama or anything, but for an ITV, I thought this was good and it had something a little bit different for me.
For an ITV?
Well, I'm saying it for him.
Hey, I didn't say anything.
Yeah, he didn't say anything, no. But it does have a whiff of ITV about it, doesn't it?
You know what I mean? Even worse.
It's soaked in ITV. I love ITV, by the way.
I think it makes excellent usage, though, we should say, visually, of the Scottish Highland
where they
bleak,
happen upon the body.
Where they happen. Well, some has happened upon the body, though.
Yes, they do.
To be fair, it's just not the characters you said. Right, they're brought in. They're specifically brought in by those who happened upon.
Yeah. It's an appointment viewing.
It's an appointment viewing of the body. And I thought that, that quite spectacular use of the bleak, kind of grey, cold, rocky backdrop
it's rugged,
the Highlands or wherever the hell it is, was really well done, like really, really impressive. And I think that she is great. Laura Donnelly.
Who was leading the Nevers? Do you remember the Nevers? Joss Whedon's the Nevers.
Exactly, yeah. By the way, I think kudos to ITV because she's not that well known, I think, here. Mm. She's done a bit of stuff in America.
The Nevers was obviously banished to the
Ethos.
I haven't seen her at all.
That was unfortunate, so they've cast someone relatively, not unknown, but relatively unknown in comparison, in this big, chunky lead role. And she's really good, I think. She's quite kind of cold and enigmatic in a way, you know, in her day-to-day.
Much like yourself, Boyden.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think she does that really well. Like the way she treats her new police partner, who is, as you said, what did you describe him as, an idiot?
He's an idiot.
All these words.
Do you know there's a scene where they're driving back, and this is one of the scenes where I thought, oh, I don't know if I can continue watching this. And for some reason, the writers have decided that she needs to divulge everything that's happened to her to him in this one car scene, and she just gives him her whole backstory and her whole history, and it just was really, I thought it was really clunky. I didn't like that, but anyway, sorry, carry on.
Okay. But she's really good.
Yeah, she is good.
And but I agree with you, I was interested. I think there's enough interesting stuff going on because you've got this mysterious woman who pops up in the cinema in the very first scene, who's got some backstory with her, with Laura Donnelly's character. You've got this whole other situation going on with Helen Baxter and her husband, Emin Elliott, who are the parents. And you've got the actual murder itself, the naked men thing. And I think that is really key, that they are men. All of the men in this show, spoiler alert, are the victims. And and you're tracing another storyline, another set of characters, the guy who works in the pub restaurant and his dad, who seems quite grumpy, and you've got the dog as well, as
the
you say.
The dog is so great.
The dog is great. And then you've got this absolute nightmare of a finale of the first episode, which really seals the deal.
It does.
I think that, because that turns it from fairly, you know,
pedestrian
drama.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say pedestrians are big.
It's by the numbers. Nothing feels surprising.
Sure.
It feels very familiar.
Maybe apart from the male bodies thing, that's an interesting, that's a departure.
Oh, I applaud
But then,
that.
In the final 5 minutes, the final shot itself, you're like, oh, hold on. This is quite scary, creepy, properly creepy, like almost rural horror kind of thing.
Yeah, it has a touch of the folk horror.
Yeah, it really does. And then I started watching the second episode and they ratchet that up more and more goes on.
Okay.
Yeah. So it is kind of folk horror meets detective drama. I think it works quite well. But so I think there's enough going on in that, you know, whether you think it's pedestrian or a bit slow or a bit or deliberately paced, as we say, I think it all builds up so well to that final moment, which is horrific. And I thought they do that. They pulled that off really well. Because that could have been cheesy and a bit, you know, try hard, but it really works.
But it's
really horrendous. It's scary. It's horrible. So I think that's what makes it a cut above, I think, in the end.
James, ready for you to rip into it, please?
No, it was fine.
Oh,
That's my whole review.
It was just fine.
No, I liked it. As you say, like when it starts off, it's quite dour and a bit boring. But no, it is. And then
he liked it, but it's dour and
pedestrian, a bit boring.
It took me a little while to work out whether or not we had sort of parallel chronologies. Do you know what I mean? Because obviously you see a character who is clearly being groomed by the killer. And I'm like, is that the naked you know, buns out bloke from the beginning of the episode. Is that, are we seeing how he got killed?
Oh, I don't know. And, I didn't think that at all.
No, obviously he's you know, the next victim. But I was trying to work
just
out.
Misunderstood.
Because
the narrative.
No, it's very common. And fucking, you know, Yellowstone does this all the time. Where you jump to a different chronology, but you don't signpost it in any way.
Yeah.
And that can be really, I mean, Department Q is a really good example of how that's deployed and, you know, to great sort of twisty effect. But that's what I thought was being done here. And then I was like, oh, no, no, you're the next victim. So, okay.
I didn't get that at all.
All right, so clearly I'm an idiot. But
no,
anyway,
you're not
I misunderstood
an idiot.
The episode for a while. And then eventually I figured
it out. Is it because he's using an old school mobile phone? Did you think that it was
So this is interesting. Initially, I was like, when is this set? Because it's got that slightly almost like 70s lighting thing.
It's a burner.
I know that. It's like an old Nokia, isn't it?
Yeah.
But initially, I was like,
I'm just trying to give an excuse for his stupidity.
Oh, well, you're trying to help him out and he's rejecting it.
I mean, it wouldn't have been, bearing in mind that they found his body on the moor the day before, he wouldn't have been killed in the 1970s.
maybe there's a whole time travel element to it that we get to make it clear.
I didn't think that, but I wondered whether it was like, it was basically, I'd missed a thing that said like 3 days earlier or something like that. I don't know. But anyway, so we've established I didn't really understand it.
Yeah.
And I thought it was fine.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Great.
Will you carry on watching it?
Absolutely.
I was in the dark. No, I will not be continuing watching it. But I think it was decent.
I really want to know what it is, because that really got me hooked.
Because there's a religious cult thing going on, which you didn't mention.
Yes, that is true. And they mentioned at the beginning, there's been this sort of cult thing.
Oh, it's the old case, isn't there?
Yeah, there's an old case involving a cult.
There's a lot going on. There's more.
But then part of me is just like, this is interesting, but Under Salt Marsh is still on my sofa list, so I feel like that's definitely one to prioritise.
James, you're absolutely right. That is the benchmark for crime dramas.
Or just because it's got what's the name in it?
No, because I loved it before. I loved Yellowstone. Kelly Riley. My best friend.
It freaks me out when she speaks with her actual accent.
I know, it's weird. I don't like it.
No.
Under Salt Marsh was absolutely... That'll probably be on all of our... Will it for you? Maybe not.
Was it this year?
Was it not?
I think it was this year.
Was it this year?
I think so. But having... That's a good... Good question.
Yeah, we need to go back and look. I have no idea. Let's not do a live podcast. Yeah. Was it this year? It might have been this year. I'm not sure. Anyway, The Dark then, which airs on every iteration of ITV, ITVX, ITV1, I don't know, whatever else.
It's on ITV1.
It's on ITV1. Yeah. And ITVX.
Yeah, but everything on ITV1 is automatically on ITVX. It doesn't mean anything.
Oh, God.
Show me the lie.
It's like saying everyone on BBC, it's on BBC iPlayer.
It is.
Like, all right. Okay. Anyway, all you need to know is it's on ITV1 this Sunday, the 12th of July at 9 p.m. and carries on Monday.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
It's on Sunday, Monday for the next 3 weeks.
Fabuloso.
6 episodes in all. And I can confirm, by the way, at the same time, because I'm multitasking here, that Under Salt Marsh was indeed this year.
Oh, God, you're doing some great number crunching today.
Come on. That's very helpful. That's another one I've got to watch before we do the
show.
The
yellow. This year.
What?
Were you not here for the conversation where I just said I can't watch this because I have yet to finish Under Salt Marsh? Honestly, she doesn't listen to anything I say. Our second show this week, and this is going to be a completely seamless transition because you would never know that we've literally just evacuated the building because of a fire alarm test. And then when it got lunch, and by lunch, I mean Bim Boydie went to Itsu, and Steph bought, looks at desk, family packets of Maltesers, Haribo, Minstrels, and is there a fourth one?
Werther's Originals.
And this is, and I am not joking, Steph's lunch. Steph, hold up the lunch. Hold it for the camera. Go on, show them. Show them your lunch. This is Steph's lunch. This is Steph's actual work lunch. Hold it up. Go on. Own it. Yeah, there we go. There we go. All the major food groups there represented. And by that, I mean Werther's Originals, Haribo, Maltesers and Minstrels. So, yeah, nice. Good.
I can't believe I've been publicly shamed.
You've been publicly shamed for your lunch. I'm staging an intervention. Anyway, on the subject of human vapor, we are now turning to our next show, which is Human Vapor on Netflix, which is a TV reboot of the 1960 sci-fi horror of the same name, which you may or may not know is from Godzilla creator Ishiro Honda. And this sees a criminal who can turn himself to fumes and he commits crimes on national television. So, Boydie, tell us, is this a gas or a load of hot air?
Well... this begins with a very entertaining and kind of shocking sequence in which a top kind of old bald guy scientist
being
is being interviewed by a famous reporter, Kyoko Kono, they're having a chat, and then you see some kind of gaseous, indeed, vapor entering the TV studio where this is going out, being broadcast live. And within seconds, this isn't, by the way, I suppose, this is the setup of the show.
Yeah.
So I'm just explaining the setup before people will accuse me of spoiling things like they always do. Within seconds, he's kind of shoots up into the air.
He levitates. Yeah.
Kind of towards the ceiling, hits the ceiling, and then explodes all over poor
Kyoko.
And the rest of the crew who are filming him. And there's blood splattered everywhere. And then at the same time, we meet this cop who has a nice, he's having a nice lunch in his local noodle bar or whatever. And he encounters a young immigrant worker who's being abused by his boss, and he kind of intervenes in that situation. That's how we're introduced to him. And then the cop goes to investigate the exploding man. The reporter was also investigating the exploding man because she was right in the middle of him exploding all over her. And together they then form the plot of the whole thing, which is that they are investigating the exploding man and the various appearance of this gaseous matter, and which arrives in some kind of box sent to a specific guy, and he doesn't understand what's happening either. It's very entertaining. I think the characters are immediately fun, and you're kind of drawn to them, and the cop's kind of very effectively played by Shun Aguri, who is a model, apparently, I was reading, in Japan, and this is his first acting job.
The cop guy. Oh, he is handsome.
Yeah,
he's really good.
Yeah, really good. And it's fun. What to say is, and it's kind of it is shot in a quite cinematic way, and it feels like it's quite a deluxe piece of TV making, except for the CGI. Some of the CGI effects are quite bad, I thought.
Compositing, was it, Boydie?
I don't know whether it's LED the
volume, was it, Boydie?
The LED volume or whatever. But the gas itself, first of all, in that opening scene that I'm describing, is kind of a bit cheesy.
Unconvinced by the gas.
Cheesy gas.
Cheesy gas. I don't know whether I thought
and
that.
And then when he starts levitating, but the explosion was quite well done. That was fine. But yeah, there was definitely moments of it that I felt were dubious. Now, I'm no expert, unlike James, so we'll find out his verdict in a second. But that did stand out to me that there were, because obviously the whole thing's relying on the special effect of this fucking human vapor.
See, I thought you were going to take issue with the tailoring of the antagonist's suit.
No.
He had an deliberately ill-fitting tailored suit.
Yeah, it was deliberate.
An oversized suit.
Oh yeah, sure. That was a little bit. I mean, yeah, you could take issue with that. But no, yeah, I thought the effects every now and then weren't great. But then, you know, then when you read that it's a remake of the thing made by the Godzilla guy, you can feel in a way it's part of the whole fun that they don't have to be.
Yeah.
It is fun.
Yeah, but it is. I had a good time. It's very fast moving.
Mm.
And it is, obviously the only reason we're reviewing is because there's nothing else to review this week. We have to be, you know, brutally honest about it. But I in the end, I was enjoying the fact that we are reviewing it, and I would never watch it probably.
No,
because I don't know anything about the original.
No, I don't either.
But it was, yeah, it was a whole lot of fun.
I think this had layers. I was, you know, considering it's vapor, it had a lot of layers.
Layered vapor.
Yeah, the last time I saw anyone explode this well was Bella Hadid in the Beauty. Wouldn't you agree? When she exploded in the Beauty, it was a great explosion. And this was also a great explosion. I've got to give credit to the opening credits of this show because I thought they were particularly well done.
Oh, yeah, the credits are nice.
Really, really nice. The cop. So you're introduced to the cop, who we now know is a model, who... It's unclear, and again, I don't know the film at all. It's unclear why he's been suspended and he gets reinstated within the first kind of 5 minutes of this show. And then what I also really enjoyed was there's flashbacks, and it becomes clear that there is some kind of romantic entanglement between Kyoko and the cop guy, whose name I can't recall at the moment.
Model man.
Let's call him Model Man. And I like that whole. I like that whole little dynamic that you know is gonna play out.
Frisson.
I kind of liked the reminiscing scenes, and I think it's a good mystery. And I actually, because I don't know anything about it, when it gets to the kind of end of the first episode, and it's not a spoiler because we already know this man is human vapor, I was like, oh, it's a superhero thing. He's human. Like, he's a villain. He's vapor. He's like human vapor. And then I liked it even more. But yeah, I would never have watched this because, as you know, I'm not a big fan of shows you can read. I'm not a big fan of shows you have to read. But, yeah, it was good.
Can I just correct myself?
Please.
It's actually the human vapor himself who is the model who's never acted before.
Oh, the cop seemed an elderly model. Yeah. Oh, okay.
I was going to say.
Sorry.
Because I can see that.
Yes. Played by, he's a guy called Uta.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah. Funny enough, the guy playing the detective is Sean Aguirre,
not a model.
Who's made over 100 different films and TV shows.
Okay.
And is one of the most experienced and prolific actors in all of Japan.
This is my favourite mistake that you have ever made.
This is what the readers pay for. Yeah. Listeners pay for.
Yeah. As I said, I was thinking maybe I've got that the wrong way around. And
yeah,
indeed,
I think he was a bit elderly to be, to be really kind of stomping the catwalk. But yeah, it's kind of got a Ring vibe to it, you know, the Ring. There's a little bit, you know, with the whole the video, because the human vapor guy's on the video and doing giving a warning that people are going to get murdered. And all that. I think, yeah, once you're in it, it's good.
Is it?
Oh. I mean, it's okay.
Oh, come on,
it's okay. It's
okay.
Like,
sorry, I'm going to downgrade good.
Yeah.
In the second mistake from this review, I'm going to downgrade good. It's okay.
I didn't feel it offered a great deal, because I think on the one hand it's a bit silly, and
I don't mind silly.
It's a bit silly, but it's quite heightened in the way that it's acted. Like the acting is a little bit sort of like on point. Like it's very heightened, and and also like the story didn't really grip me either. I was a bit like, yeah, okay, Vapor Man, you're going to turn out, you can do an interview and you're blowing people up, and you think that speaking incredibly slowly and opaquely makes you mysterious and scary. It just doesn't make for good television.
Oh, I thought he was quite scary.
I mean, the fit of his suit was quite terrifying.
Don't you want to know? I mean, because obviously he says the thing of like, oh, you know, this scientist did something wrong and it reeks of there being people experimented on something. Of course, that's going to be...
Because that's never been done before.
Okay. Yeah. Well, X-Men, yeah, obviously. Like, but I just feel like...
X-Men were children of the atom,
yeah,
Steph.
Oh, sorry. But you know what I mean? That kind of vibe of like people who, you know, have special powers because of...
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's not good, is it?
I just like it was okay, and like, it might get more interesting because I accidentally watched the beginning of episode 2 and it's somewhat mad.
How did you accidentally watch it?
I forgot to turn it off when the first one finished. Ninja Doors played the second one, but I was just like this is not gripping me. And like super villains, yes, on board for that, people turning into vapor and murderizing people, theoretically on board. It's not very propulsive.
I think it is so propulsive.
Really?
Yeah, I thought it was
propulsive. It's just a little bit silly.
Yeah, I agree with you on the silly thing, but I think that was almost part of the whole tone of it, and the over-the-top acting, etc. But I thought it was propulsive. I thought that was one of the good characteristics.
It propelled me to go and watch something else. So.
Oh, okay. Wow.
I think it does. I accidentally watched a bit more of it as well.
And this is accidental watching.
Because it does
happening.
Autoplay. Yeah, it Netflix. Does. And unless you literally grab your remote, you're like, it's
Do you know
autoplay.
What I really hate about Netflix, right? When it's so judgy, like you've been watching too much television, it goes... Are you sure you still want to stay on this, or should you?
Yes,
are you going to turn
indeed.
Off? And it's so judgy. It's like you've been watching too much television.
Of course, if you want to watch the credits as well, you're absolutely effed. Because
no, it's moving on to the next. You're like, I want to know who the third gaffer's assistant was.
That's why.
Thanks.
I was confused at who was the model and who was the actor.
Okay.
Anyway, I did also accidentally watch a bit more, and there's some influencer characters that come in, so it makes it more suddenly up to date and kind of knowing and a bit meta. It gets a bit as it goes on, which is interesting and a bit more propulsive.
Yeah.
People
may well like this. Maybe it'll be a massive sleeper hit, but I know.
I could see there being a little bit of a cult following of this. I can think people are going to get behind it.
Well, it's a Toho Studios thing, and obviously they have a large fan base.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway, that's Human Vapor, should you feel so inclined, and that is available on the Netflix now.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Finally this week, we have X-Men 97 Season 2, which is, yes, you're right, a cartoon. But despite that, we have put our long-standing antipathy towards all animation, our animation bias, if you will, on hold to see if 90s throwback animation is something that we can get on board with, especially because it has Marvel superheroes in it.
I have absolutely... Hold on. Don't start grouping me in with you two. I love animation. I have nothing against animation.
What's your favourite animation, Steph?
Cities of Gold.
Which what?
Cities of Gold.
Someday we will find the Cities of Gold.
Yeah.
I mean, when I said animation, I thought you might go with something kind of highbrow and adult, but you know, you've gone straight for the kids' cartoons.
Okay, of recent times, Flow. I loved Flow.
Yeah, Flow's very good.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Oh, no, Flow's great.
Yeah. I thought you were about to go back, double down and say, yeah, Bluey. I'd say Bluey is probably my my favourite animation.
Don't fucking come for Bluey, James.
By all accounts, Bluey is like the gold standard of kids' TV.
I will come for you if you come for Bluey.
It's bold to come for Bluey.
Yeah.
Wow. Bluey is one of the greatest animations of all time.
So I've heard.
Everyone can watch it.
Yeah, it's on my sofa list.
That's your response to everything now.
Yeah, it is his response to everything. Yeah. You should watch Bluey.
I'm not going to watch Bluey.
Can you watch an episode of Bluey before you watch Widow's Bay?
No.
Okay, fine.
I'm not doing it.
Anyway, I'm just saying I love animation.
Okay, Steph, the animation fiend, is on board for this.
Yeah, but don't get me to describe it because I've got no idea what's going
on. Right, okay. Oh, no, you're taking it now.
No, I can't take it.
Oh, it's too late. It is far too late.
No, I'm not taking it.
That shit has sailed.
Pilot TV's animation correspondent, Steph Zealand. Well, 100% pick up, because obviously we pick up from where we left them in season one. As you will, of course, know, Steph, being a massive fan of animation, they were in chronological exile. So we see how they deal with that in an episode here called Days of Past Future, which, of course, as you know, Steph, is a riff on the famous X-Men storyline Days of Future Past, and indeed the film of the same name. Isn't that right? Steph, explain away.
Oh, God, don't make me... I don't know. I have no idea. I can tell you this, that they're scattered throughout different time periods from ancient Egypt to the future, to the far future. And, okay, what they've got to do is they've got to find their way back to the 90s, okay?
We're all trying to do that stuff.
Listen, I'm doing that all the time. Okay, right, so they need to get together to get rid of Apocalypse, right?
En Sabanur, the first mutant.
Why is he making me do it when he can do the voices as well? I'm just going to say that I had to watch this really quickly this morning, and this is not my preferred way to watch animation, because what I really wanted to do is wake up on Saturday morning and get a massive bowl of Cocoa Pops and sit down in my front room and watch it, which is how all animation, and especially this type of animation, should be devoured.
That's fair.
It is, isn't it? It's fair. Okay, so I was trying to take it all in, but obviously I hadn't watched the first season of X-Men 97.
But did you watch the X-Men, the animated series, in the 90s?
Yeah, I watched it in the 90s, but I can't remember it. Yeah, because I've got an older brother, and my brother would watch all of that. So like, I watched everything. That's why I like superheroes and Marvel.
It was no Jason the Wheeled Warriors, but, you know.
That's great. No, but that's why I love all that kind of stuff, because I was forced to watch it, because then you end up liking it, don't you? But anyway, right, so Apocalypse, we've got to stop Apocalypse from taking over reality, okay?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Meanwhile, back in the home era, you've got Jubilee and Sunspot, and are they trying to save their son?
Well, you wouldn't know, because they're not in the first episode.
Okay,
but yes.
I don't know. Right. I'm
but
very
yes, they will
confused.
Turn up. They're trailed at the very end of the first episode. We know that they're...
And who's trying to save their son in this first one?
Yes, it's... that would be Cyclops and Jean Grey. Their son, of course, being Nathan Summers,
honestly...
who grows up to be Cable in the future.
Okay,
and he is infected with a kind of cybernetic virus, which is, you know, constantly battling with.
I'm just going to say, I have not watched X-Men for so long, I literally can't remember who anyone is. So
Storm is the one who manipulates Storm.
Halle Berry, I know who Storm is. Like, listen, everyone knows who Storm is, okay? Everyone knows who Wolverine is. I'm talking about the lesser known ones.
Well, like Bishop
ones.
And Forge and the like.
Who's the one with the headband?
I think are you referring to Forge?
Oh, I don't
know. The one who's hopping around in time.
The guy with the headband, it looks like John Travolta.
Oh. Someone looks like John Travolta.
Sure. Oh, yeah, he has got... I don't know.
Okay.
I don't remember one looking like John Travolta.
I haven't watched X-Men for so long. My brother is so obsessed with X-Men, he named his first child Xavier. And when people try and call him Xavier, it's Xavier. Charles Xavier, that's what he's called. His name's not Charles Xavier, but he's called Xavier. Just say.
Still,
anyway,
he could have just called his son Charles and been done with it.
But. I should have done a rewatch because I'm not up to speed on this. I'm sorry. I should. Oh, God, he would love that. Yes, so that's all I know about this. I am just going to hammer home the point. I do think that you have to consume these type of series on a Saturday morning with a bowl of your favourite cereal. It's really hard when you're in an office watching it to kind of get it into your eyes, all right? And in fairness to us, I only did get this last night, so I'm probably not the best person. But what I love about this kind of throwback is the music. To me, that takes me back to a time and place where I'm very happy and very comfortable, and it's a duvet on the sofa on the Saturday morning. And yeah, and this is the kind of thing that I would watch with Gracie, and I know that she would really like. As a 45-year-old woman, I'm not sure I'm just going to watch it off my own back, is all I'd say. But it was good for the cartoon that it is as a throwback.
That was the analysis from Pilot TV's animation correspondent. We turn now to TV's Boyd Hilton.
I really liked the title sequence.
Which is basically the same one that the 90s show had.
I wouldn't know because I didn't ever watch this.
You never watched? Okay, so he's less than me, okay? I feel better now.
Oh, I never watched the 90s version, not in the slightest interested. Oh. I like the X-Men movies, the live-action movies. They were good ones.
Okay.
You know, they vary in quality, obviously, but some of them are really good, some of them are mediocre.
Okay.
But this title sequence, this was really fun. Like, showed you each ex-person, you know, like a little card of them, and the music was fun. As you say, it was like kind of 80s rock, 80s power rock of some kind. But the rest of it, I was just completely bewildered.
But that's
frankly.
Because you're not 13.
I mean,
well, this isn't aimed at 13-year-olds, really. This is aimed at people who watched X-Men when they were 13.
Oh, it's aimed at me. Okay. Oh, well, I liked it.
Yeah, it's quite, you know, it's quite adult. Is it? I don't know.
Fundamentally here, this is, I think, you've stumbled, frankly, in the dark by absolute fluke onto the crux of this issue,
which is, who is this for?
Yes. So a lot of the people that I know who watch it are generally people who either watched X-Men the Animated Series in the 90s and like, oh my God, this is bad, that's so cool, and they got the same voice actors, by and large, and the same animation style, it just feels like the same show. Or they're people who, I guess, are just animation nuts, right? But it's still the same kind of, and to be fair, I don't think X-Men was generally a Saturday morning cartoon. Certainly that's not when I watched it. But it's still essentially a kid's show. Like, it's not an ad. Like, we're saying Invincible, right? Invincible uses a similar, shall we say, slightly basic throwback 90s animation style where it looks a bit shit. But it's undeniably adult in tone. It's much more sophisticated in its writing. And Invincible is probably an example of using, you know, really shitty, janky animation, but with very sophisticated storytelling. Yeah. This uses the same janky animation, but I would argue, and many people who listen to this podcast and who love animation and I'm sure disagree. I feel the storytelling is not sophisticated. I feel that it is aimed very much at children because it feels a bit basic to me. And I think I had this with X-Men 97, the first season. I watched it. I'm like, this isn't for me. Like, this is just a kid show. And I am no longer 13. I am now much older than that. And I don't care anymore.
It definitely is a kid's cartoon.
Yes, this is what I'm saying.
Okay, fine.
So I feel like this isn't like adult animated storytelling. This is just a kid's cartoon, but a lot of adults enjoy it and watch it. And I'm sure I will get lots of hate for this because I know there are a lot of people listening to this podcast who love X-Men 97. Amon Warman, who has contributed to this podcast, I know is a massive fan.
There is nothing wrong. But there's also absolutely nothing wrong with adults loving.
Yeah, but I know what you mean because that was the point I was about to make before you launched that monologue. No, it's fine because you've summed it up. Yeah, is that I was mystified because I thought the whole show was an adult oriented animation, but the voice acting and the script,
mm-hmm.
the dialogue is very easy to follow. Also, just basic.
It's so basic.
And so I was bewildered because I was thinking, I thought that was in my mind. I thought it was going to be some quite sophisticated, you know, banter or I don't know, something or other that would define it as being for adults. But no, there isn't. And so yeah, I felt. Like, I have no wish to watch any of it anymore, ever again.
And I had this with Invincible, and I often do with animation, is it's what I call animation voice.
Yes.
Where they put on this incredibly high, like, humans don't talk like this. And I get that, you know, when you're doing an animated show like this, you're not really going for naturalism. It's not fucking cinema verite, right? That's not what they're trying to do.
Definitely not.
Right. And so I get it, but it takes me out of it. I can't.
It takes you out of the animation.
It does, yes.
The animated voices take you out because, of the animation.
So lest we forget, Arcane was an animated show that I really, really enjoyed.
Love that.
It's really good. It's beautiful. The animation is stunning. The acting is great. The storyline is multi-layered and complex, and it's really engaging. That is what I want from an animation. Okay. I want it to have great storytelling, great acting, and look stunning. This looks dreadful by design. It is, to be fair, no, it is a stylistic choice.
It's comforting.
It's a stylistic choice, but let's be honest, it's not pushing the boundaries of animation, right? The voice acting is, again, it's very heightened, very kids cartoony, because that's where it evolved from. And I just don't think the storytelling is sophisticated. It just feels quite basic to me. And bear in mind, so I really enjoy the X-Men stories. I like the comics. I like the characters. I'm actually already in the tank for a lot of this stuff, but I still can't
bring myself to care because the storytelling just for me just is too basic. And I just, yeah, I can't be dealing with it. I'm so sorry.
No. Wow, James. Okay. Well,
we are in agreement.
Yeah, sadly, our animation bias, despite Pilot TV's animation editor being here.
The real test, by the way, of my own personal animation bias, which I'm very upfront about, and I know it's bad, but I'm not proud of it.
No, you shouldn't be.
Is Alley Cats, is the Ricky Gervais
show. Oh, God, that's such a good point.
But, you know, having already seen the trailer and, you know, I'm like, I think I'm
going to
be on board
great.
With this one. Yeah, but that is, like, in theory, that should be a test.
Oh, God, I can't wait till we review the next series of Bluey.
It may happen.
It's only a matter of time.
It genuinely may happen. Okay, it's been a slightly chaotic podcast. Right, what else is what else is on this week?
Well, Little House on the Prairie.
Yeah, Steph's seen it.
Yeah.
By the way,
did you like in my character guide piece I did in Heat that I included the dog, Jack the dog?
I've got so much to say about Jack the dog. So I will be saying that
all
next week.
It's all about Jack the dog.
Jack the dog is one of
the main five characters.
We're going to cover Little House on the Prairie on this week's Pilot Plus.
Oh, are we going to do it Pilot Plus?
Yes.
Oh, fun.
Trying is, as we spoke to Esther.
Yes, season five.
Season five starts on Wednesday, the 8th of July, 2026. James, we're particularly interested in this one. There's a documentary produced by Louis Theroux's production company, James, on Wednesday.
He's on it.
Sky Documentaries.
Until...
Katie Price.
Oh, my God.
Nothing to hide.
She's got nothing to hide. Yeah.
I'm sure
everything.
She doesn't.
Well, you know, we'll see. There is...
What is Katie Price's alter ego?
Jordan.
Yes, okay.
I do know who she is.
Okay, I'm just checking.
I mean, that is a good point.
Yeah.
And remember Series of Austin? Do you remember the Australian thing with Ben Miller and Sally Phillips and their long-lost son?
Yes.
That's back on Friday on BBC One. I mentioned Mackenzie Cook and Marty Freeman, remember The Office? That's on Wednesday, BBC Two, 10 o'clock. And I think that's about
the Westies.
Oh, the
Don't
Westies,
the Westies,
of course,
which is on Sunday on MGM Plus.
Heavily
embargoed. Which we're going to cover that on next week's show.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, what is our pick of the week?
I mean, it's got to be The Dark, obviously.
Oh, God. Oh, no, I didn't mind Human Vapor. Oh, did I? Oh, God. No, it's The Dark, isn't it? Yeah, because The Dark was really good at the end.
It's probably The Dark.
ITV triumphs. Yay!
Yes, ITV has won. Oh, God. Right, that's it for this week's podcast. Thankfully.
We hope you enjoyed it. It's nearly 3 o'clock.
Honestly, it's taken us 3 hours to record this podcast. I cannot. We've had a fire alarm. We've had, you know, Steph. We've had so much going on. It's been exhausting, which leaves us with literally an hour left to record our Dutton Branch episodes. So we need to get into that. Please leave us a review. 5 stars would be lovely. Please don't leave us abuse. That would be awful.
Be nice.
Exactly. And we will be back to talk Little House on the Prairie on Thursday. And on next week's show, J.K. Simmons is going to be on, which is very exciting. Not just J.K. Simmons, J.K. Simmons and Tom Brittany.
Used to Boyd.
First of all, always first of all.
And they're going to be talking to Boyd's favourite, Helen O'Hara, about the Westies, which we'll be reviewing next week as well. What else is out next week? Let's see. Oh, Lucky's next week, but we're going to be doing that on Pilot Plus.
There's a bumper, load of
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff. Ride or Die. Is next week.
The Five Star Weekend.
Are we going to do Ride or Die?
Five Star Weekend. Archer the Hawk on Netflix.
Android, which is the
Diane Morgan.
Oh,
and Hot Stopper Forever, though. That's a film.
Well, is it, though?
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is it?
Yes. It
it's
is.
It's not coming out in cinemas. It's a feature-length
It's a streaming film.
It's a
TV show.
Episode.
It's a streaming film.
It's a one-off feature-length episode.
Well, we'll get into that later. Okay, God, I hope you've enjoyed this podcast. I'm not sure we have, but nevertheless, we'll see you on Thursday. Pilot out.